Good morning. We're learning Shmuel Bet. We are going to be concluding the sixth parak today. Parak Vav, we're on page 240 in our packets. I hope I have enough, and if not, I apologize for that. We're on page 240. We're up to Pasuk Yud Zayin. And as we begin our fourth and final week learning this parak, we recall Pasuk Yud Zayin. Actually, then in that case, it should be page 238. Thank you. Right, so we'll start on page 238. This section, which is typically read during the Haftorah for Parsha Shmini, which unfortunately we didn't this year because it was also Parah, but typically it is because of the tremendous similarities between the passing of Nadav and Avihu and the downfall of this boy by the name of Uzzah at the time in which they were transporting the Aron to Yerushalayim. And as we mentioned before, David was afraid, what can I do? Keeping this Aron is obviously extremely dangerous, and therefore he gave it to the hands of a Levi. That was Pasuk Yud. And then, ultimately, because of the tremendous bracha which occurred, because it was being taken care of properly, David realized, now, 3 months later, I can take it back. And he did. And instead of putting it on wagons, he did the right thing. He made sure that it was carried by the Levium. He made sure that the proper sanctity and respect was shown to the Aron, and therefore everything was fine. Well, almost everything was fine, because now we continue with Pasuk Yud Zayin, which we're now going to see an interesting conversation between David and his wife, and Michal. That even though David was jumping around, he was excited, he had tremendous enthusiasm, celebrating, rejoicing over the Aron being brought to Yerushalayim, Michal felt that it was not proper. And that will begin with Pasuk Yud Zayin. The very bottom, page 238, says as follows, V'yavihu es Aron Hashem, so they brought the Aron Hashem, V'yasigu oso v'mkomo, V'yasigu, translated by the Masud HaSion, at the very bottom is Hamidu. They established, they set it up in its proper place. B'toch Ohel, they put it in a tent, which means it was not in a permanent structure. It wasn't in a house. It was not underneath a roof, but rather it was in a tent. We'll see a very lengthy redact on the next page in a moment, discussing why it was done that way. Asher Natalo David. David pitched the tent, which is interesting that David did it himself. We find that very often when it comes to a person who is such love, ahava mekalkelet at the shura, it drives a person to do things that they typically would not do, would be beneath their honor. And this was actually the whole complaint that Michal had, that it seemed like David was doing things which were beneath his honor, the way the clothes that he wore, because he was not wearing kingly garments. He wore garments of an Eved, of an Eved Hashem, of a servant. He also danced around, and he acted in a manner which seemed a bit beneath him. Another thing, apparently, is that he pitched his own tent, as we find by Bilam, not in a good way, and by Avraham, in a good way, that they saddled their donkeys, which is also something which is not typical, but that's the idea of Ahava Mekalkel Tzashua. Sometimes when these emotions are so strong, we do things which we typically do not do. Vayal David Olos Lifnei Hashem Ushlamim. We're going to see continuously in the end of this pasuk, as numerous times later on, the words Lifnei Hashem. That everything that David does and really justifies all the questions and concerns that his wife Michal will have is, how could you behave in such a way? All the answers are basically going to be Lifnei Hashem. That he's not doing it himself, but he's doing it in a way which he's an Eved, he's serving Hashem. So he brought olos, elevation offerings, which are completely consumed on the Mizbeach, on the altar, and shlamin, which are peace offerings, which are enjoyed by others as well.
That's funny. You know, in the Parsha last week, in Parsha Shmini,
yes,
it was also said many times with Lifnei Hashem. And it was also about the olos and shlamin. The Haftarah and the Parsha really, in this case, mesh very, very well.
Yes.
Very well.
Started.
Finished. I mean, finished.
Where? Oh, okay, that's going to be the next word. But before we get into the next pasuk, let's see this lengthy radak, which is on the top page 240. Okay, now we're on the top of page 240. Okay. So the radak answers a whole bunch of questions as to why David pitched a tent. What was the reason why he did such a thing? And why did he place the aron there as opposed to maybe putting the aron in a more beautiful structure? Maybe he should have built a palace or something a little bit more permanent than just some uncomely tent, which is very strange. The radak's going to pick up on. But before I do that, you have a question.
What about Owen Moed? Because it's traveling.
Correct. So why an ohel moed is also with a tent of meeting, which is also temporary. But what's the difference? Maybe in the desert, well, they're constantly dismantling it, then they have to travel from one point to the next. To build a building seems to be a little bit ridiculous, because by the time they build the structure, they're going to be moving on to the next place. But now the Aron is in Yerushalayim. That's where it's going to stay. This is its hometown. So why would they just build something nice, more structured?
But until they have...
Correct. The Radak is going to pick up on exactly what you're saying, that even though it is in Yerushalayim, it's obviously not in the permanent place, and therefore it's placed there. So let's see the Radak, though. We're not going to see the whole thing, which is very long. We'll see maybe the first half of it.
It says ha-oil. It doesn't say oil. Ha-oil.
Betoch ha-ohel, which means it's specifying.
Yeah, well, it still has this importance.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, but it's not a permanent place. But it's
okay. So the Radak tells us as follows. The very top line on page 240, if everyone could see inside, it may not be underlined, I apologize for that. Yeriah not the low milamala. So he put this cloth, this tent, curtain, yes, above. Alpha P Shibabayas Aminada Babes Oved Edom Haya Babayas Mikura. Those other places where the Aron was before, in the house of Aminadav for a long time, and in the house of Oved Edom was there for a few months, but it was in a house with a roof, more permanent structure. Kamo Shine'emar Behem, as it says over there, Bias, it says a house. V'lenemar Shem Ohel, doesn't say a tent. So why would David place it in such a lowly thing, such as a tent? Wouldn't he have learned from the two people that treated the Aron properly that he should also put it in a house? So Radak says, no. L'fishul hoya, hoyasa amidaso behem, el derech harai. Says the difference between them and he is that when it came to his placing it, it was only there for a very temporary amount of time, at least so he thought. But now, she'alato davul Yerushalayim v'yadu kisham yishkon adiad, that when it came to David constructing the Beis HaMikdash, ultimately David in his mind thinks he's going to be the one building it, and in fact, just in the very first three psukim in the next parak, we're going to find David turning to a Navi, to Natan, asking, should I be the one building it? And Natan said, of course, who else? You're going to be the one building the Beis HaMikdash. Everyone knew David was going to build the Beis HaMikdash. Of course, he didn't. But at the time, he thought it was just a few moments, a few more steps until this would occur. And therefore, ki sham yishkon adiyan ki kabal haisa biyadam. It was known, ki Yerushalayim ir hakodesh v'sham yibon Beis HaMikdash. Everyone knew that Yerushalayim was the place. Everyone knew the Beis HaMikdash was going to be in that capital city. The truth is, if you would even turn to David and say, okay, right now, point to the exact location of where the Beis HaMikdash is going to stand, he wasn't really sure. Until later on, we'll see, much later on, in Perek Avdalad, as we'll see, that David built a Mizbeach, Alpigad HaNavi, Begorin Arona Hayavusi. He built the Begorin in the threshing floor of Arona Hayavusi, the Yared Bo Eshim and Ashmayim, and a heavenly fire came forth, which was a sign that that was the place. So up until chapter 24, we didn't know exactly where in Yerushalayim the Beis HaMikdash and the Aron was going to be. So therefore, David really couldn't have brought it to a specific location. Oz Yada, but then, only later on, David knew, Kisham Yibana Beis HaMikdash, that would be the exact place. Right here, this point, wherever it was, that's where the Beis Hamikdash is going to stand. But he didn't know it now. Until that time, says the Radak, he did not want to put it in a house with a roof. Only under a curtain or some type of a temporary structure. Mikedem, as it was before. Vigam ata now shahaya ohel moed begivon. So he asks another question. So if the question is that why did he put it in a temporary structure, is because he didn't know where the Beis Hamikdash was. So how could he put it in a house? So when it came to the time of the Beis Hamikdash, which we'll find out soon, then he'll be able to move it. Because the problem is that if he puts it in a permanent structure, so it's in a permanent structure, he'll forget about it for years. By putting it in a temporary structure, it's going to be there only for a small amount of time. And I realize this is not its place. Every time I walk by, and it's in an uncomely area, it's like just a tent covering it up, so I realize, you know what, the Beis Hamikdash needs to be built tomorrow. It needs to be built right away. So then the question the Radak asks, which we're going to see also in the first one line, is V'gam ata shahay olam moed begivon. Right now, the Ohel Moed was in a place called Givon. When it came, even though the Ohel Moed, the tent of meeting, the Mishkan was in Givon, when it came to this Aron, it was underneath this, under this curtain. So if you look to the first wide line, third word on the line, says, he asked a question. If he didn't have the Beis Hamikdash, so the Beis Hamikdash will be built soon. David is going to be the one who will build the Beis Hamikdash, or so everyone thinks. So why would you put it in Yerushalayim under a tent? Wouldn't it make more sense to place it in Givon where the Ohel Moed was? Says the Radak, says Shahar Yisham Ohel Moed. Isn't that its place? Yes, the Ohel Moed is temporary. But the reality is it belongs together in the Ohel Moed with all the other kelim, all the other vessels. So why did David put it in Yerushalayim? So let's just see these next two lines and we'll address some points. Because David knew. He knew that the Ohel Moed, even though right now it's in Givon, that's really not where it's supposed to be forever. Ultimately, it's going to move to Yerushalayim with the Beis Hamikdash. The Chashav, and therefore David thought, in my days this will be, but who you bought a Beis Hamikdash? After all, I, David, am going to be the one who will soon build a Beis Hamikdash. After all, I'm the king. That's one of the things I'm instructed to do. Lafikaf, therefore, Achar Shehavi Aaron Yerushalayim. Right after, as we'll see, he quotes, which is really going to talk about this next parent, right after he brings the Aaron to Yerushalayim, Shol and Natan Hanavi, he turned to Nathan the prophet, and he asked, Im Yibon Bayis Hashem, whether or not he should be the one building the Beis Hamikdash. The Nasan Omar, the prophet responded to him, Kol Asher B'Lavavecha Aseh, whatever's in your heart, you should do. In other words, you want to do so, then it shall be done. The Malib Omar Lo Nasan Zeh, Lo B'Nevua, Ki Chashem Maliba, Kamo Shechashem David, Ki Hu Yibana Habayis. Nasan understood 100% that David will build the Beis Hamikdash. Nasan didn't even need to ask Hashem. He understood this must be, who else is going to do it? Obviously, it's going to be David. And therefore, because of that, even though the Ohel Moed was in a different location, but since David was going to build the Beis Hamikdash, it would be ridiculous to bring it to a place where it didn't belong. So instead, keep it in Yerushalayim. I'm going to build the Beis Hamikdash, and then the Aron will go in its proper place. You had a point.
Why doesn't he move the Ohel Moed? From Givon. These are all the things that were built for the purpose of moving.
Well, ultimately, that is something which he wishes to do. Ultimately, the Ohel Moed is going to be brought to Yerushalayim, all its various vessels, and be brought to Yerushalayim for the Beis Hamikdash. So if you're the one that purchases the offering and you bring it to the, and then I take it on your behalf and I do whatever you're supposed to do. Right. So was it me? I didn't really do it. It was yours.
I understand, but usually when they tell you how to coordinate, especially when it's something new, when it's a new design. No. You move from one place to the other, so you set up the command, and they always tell you how to do the command.
So you're thinking David did it himself? It doesn't imply that in the sense, though. Just as he brought them up, brought them and
but they don't mention the command.
Yeah.
It's well, but maybe it's obvious.
I would imagine that. You know, that David did not do it himself. It'd be very hard to understand.
They don't mention the Kohen. They mention the Navi, they don't mention the Kohen.
But it was his thoughts, it was his animals, it was his, you know, his possessions, his money, everything. So he didn't go through he didn't pick up a knife and slaughter it. But the person who picks it up and slaughters it is not the one that brought it. He's doing his job, but it's mine. Right.
There's two sides to the story.
Right.
The people and the Kohanim.
It's like a person who brings a chattas, a sin offering. So,
right.
I'm not the one bringing it. I am bringing it, but I'm not the one that actually goes through the whole offering.
You are considered the one bringing the karma.
Right. And the kapara is not for the Kohen. The atonement is upon the person who brought it. But I understand the wording sounds a little bit like David brought it, which is hard for us to imagine. Let's move on to the next pasuk Yudches, very top of page 240. Vayichal David, and Vayichal means what?
He finished.
David finished mehalot ha'ola from having the ola offerings brought on his behalf, the hashlamim as well as the shlamim offerings. V'yavarech es'am b'shem Hashem Tzvav. So, how did he respond? He blessed the nation in the name of Hashem. So he brought karbanos, and in addition, he brought shlamim offerings. It's a peace offering, because unlike the ola, as we mentioned, the ola is completely consumed. A shlamim brings shalom, peace, because not only is some of it given to Hashem, some of it's given to the Kohen, and some of it's given to the owners. Therefore, everyone gets a piece of it. And that's how shalom could be brought about. And b'yavarech es'am, and he blessed the people in the process. Next pasuk says, pasuk yotes, v'yichalek l'chol ha'am, l'chol hamon Yisrael, that he divided up and gave to all the different people. Did he only give to the men? No. Pasuk says, "Meish l'adisha." He gave men, he gave women. L'ish chalas lechem achas. He gave a nice loaf of bread. The eshpar echad. The eshpar is an unusual word. That's why the Masudas Sion and Rashi help us out. Masudas Sion says, "Ratzalomar money yafa baser." It's a nice shtick flesh, a nice piece of meat. And Rashi says even more specific, quoting in Gemara, which is at the very top. The eshpar echad mishish shebepar, 1/6 of a sixth.
A sixth.
It's like almost like a pizza, but cut into six slices.
It's only
like
to the men, it says la'ish. Yeah, but that would be inclusive. Why would it say?
Well, it says la'ish v'ad. They gave la'ish v'ad isha. Then la'ish probably means to each individual, right? That's how it's translated here, to each person. Because it was l'mi'ish v'ad isha, men and women, and then so l'ish, to every single of the people, he gave some bread, he gave some meat. So the question is, so what did it say the word meat? And how does Rashi, how does the Gemara really know that it's a 1/6 of a cow? So if you look at the word eshpar, it's actually an acronym. It's Rashi Tevot, Echad Shishim Par, 1/6 of a par, of a cow. That's how the Miyam Loes interprets it. Echad Meshisha B'par. Alright. Anyway, so, but that's maybe why they use that word, to emphasize the amounts. But he gave a lot of food.
Per person, we're talking.
Family. Right, it sounds like it's per person, right?
Right.
So, yeah, that's quite a bit.
They eat a lot.
Apparently so, or they have a lot of leftovers. Vashisha echos.
They ate it all on the spot. They right. A lot of children. Yeah,
right. Maybe that's also true. That's also true.
And the in-laws, everywhere else together.
But it says every person. Maybe it means every adult. But nonetheless, he certainly gave a lot of food. Vashisha echos. Vashisha. Masudas Sion translates is is the name of a kli, a vessel, yasimu boyayin, where it's wine is put. So they had bread, they had meat, they had wine. The yelech kol am ishul beis, and every person went to their home. Right? Ain simcha el b'basar, ain simcha el boyayin. So a person was happy with the meat and with the wine, and this whole element is the idea of simcha. And we there's an expression that in simcha el b'makom seuda, that a person is happy when you get a nice free lunch. So, in order, unfortunately, you know, some people, like on the Madrega of David, they're just happy with Nei Hashem. They're able to feel that sense of simcha all themselves. Unfortunately, others who are on a lower level, they need external stimuli in order to be able to bring out the inner joy. And therefore, that's the idea of why he had to give them food and all these different nice little treats.
He went home to his
That's also
he
true.
Very smart. Rav says, "Ishto beisto." He went home to his wife.
All they all went. So they all went back to their homes. So you'll see an arrow, which, as this particular sefer does, it points out where the Haftorah begins, where it ends. You look on the left side. I should have looked this up. That at, very often there's a difference between there's different minhagim as to where the Haftorah begins, where it ends. So according to some, I don't remember who, usually Ashkenaz or Sfard, they stop the Haftorah at this point. But you'll notice the line continues. There's two lines, and then it continues with one, because some people continue the Haftorah Parsha Shmini with the next section. And the question is, why? The answer really is not going to be necessarily this story, but it's going to be the ultimate discussion of the building of the Beis HaMikdash, which goes all the way into the seventh parak. So those who read this extended part have a much lengthier Haftorah. So now we're going to continue into this uncharted territory for some, for the Haftorah, Pasuk Chaf. Vayashav David Levarech Es Beiso. So David, everyone else went back to their homes, and David, who lived a well-balanced life, even though he was Lifnei Hashem, now he goes home, and he doesn't forget his family, and he blesses his household. But Tetzi Michal Bas Shaul, here again we find not just it's Michal, but we mention her relationship to her father, who was a king, and that may very well play into the fact of how she speaks to her husband, thinking that it was inappropriate the way that he dealt with the people, the way he conducted himself, dancing in such a manner. Likras David, so she went out to meet her husband, the Tomer, and she said the following statement, which is sarcastic. But Tomer said, "Ma nichban hayom melech Yisrael asher nigo hayom le'enei amahot avodav." So she said, "How honorable you are, King of Israel, today, that you have revealed today the eyes of the Amahot, which is the Mesudas Sion translates. Mesudas Sion says, right, because that's what the Mesudas Sion says. It's the Shivchos, the Shvachot, it's the female servants, the Vadov, as well as the male servants, the Galos Niglos. Achad ha-reikim, and you have revealed yourself as one who is reikim, empty, Masuda Sion says, anashim reikim mikol mala. They're empty from anything which is anything positive, anything which is good. You have just...
No kidding.
Right. So as we said...
I suggest you talk to your husband.
What?
In
the English translation...
Yes. Yes.
Second of all, she saved David's life.
Yes.
At the expense of her own.
Right.
And for him to sort of disregard that in a moment when she perhaps had some right on her side according to the way she was thinking, maybe she was wrong, I feel that there was a problem there.
Well, I guess we're going to have to... We're gonna see in the next pasuk how David reacts. We'll have to analyze his reaction.
What she feels about him, booze.
What?
That's a very strong word.
But the bezlo beliba.
But she just she was.
Tell what it means. Not everyone knows.
Find the word in English.
He was kind of disgusting.
To look down.
Nimas.
It was. No, it's worse than it.
It's worse than disgusting.
It's a lie.
It's. Nimas. He was degrading her. You can't get on lower.
Oh, wow.
When you look at someone this way,
garbage.
She, not that he was king, she looks at him with very
But remember that she was very good to him, too.
She sees him out dancing the window. She sees him dancing. She sees how he's dressed. She sees how he's acting. And she is... When in Israel, when there's a show and people don't like the show, they say boo.
Oh, that's
boo.
Where the word
that's
comes.
That's how. That's what boo is.
A biza,
isn't it from biza? Boo.
Biza. It's also biza.
Degradation.
Right. Degradation.
Degradation.
That's the issue.
She's looking at him.
He was degraded in her eyes.
In her eyes.
That's
her
eyes.
Did anything wrong?
No.
It's in her eyes.
She snaps. She snaps him. It's so low.
I think we have to continue reading about it. Because we come to that word that we discussed.
There's a few points that we should highlight over here. First of all, as we mentioned, it's Michal Bas Shaul, so you have to understand that it's based on what she's experienced in her life. She's comparing her husband now to what her father was before. And some explain, also, if we look in the same Pasuk, she calls him Melech Yisrael, because he was not always Melech Yisrael. So some actually explain that, I understand that you used to conduct yourself in a certain way when you were king of a smaller group of people, when you're a melech over Yehuda, but not over all of Klal Yisrael. Now that you're a melech over Melech Yisrael, then you have to act in a different manner. That's another point. If you look in the Radak, we're only going to see one line over here. It's the lines are very wide, but if you look where the first words on the line are parentheses. It's like basically in the middle of the wide lines. Bamidbar Rabbah, the Radak. Very wide lines. Bamidbar Rabbah. Pretty much in the center.
Right in the center from the other one.
Approximately, yeah. So I just want to read I want to read just like eight words. Amra lo, she was saying to him, Shalbeis Abba hoysa malchus no mishalach. That the malchus of my father was... was greater, and the way he acted as a melech was greater than the way that you're acting. The way that you're behaving is right. Apparently, was on some way she understood it was not appropriate. If we look in the English on page 241, where it's 20, it says after the words radak, because we kind of saw it. Before we talked about it outside, rather than soak up the honors that awaited him from his courtiers and admirers, after he had shepherded the large and hugely successful procession, David went to his family. This is another illustration of David's righteousness and humility. So we see continuously David is an anav, he's humble, the way he conducts himself before, and also the way he's conducting himself now that he humbly goes to the home. Now, just to defend Michal, just for one last moment, is that if you look in Pasachah, the wording is no coincidences, but Teitse Michal Bashal, that she went out. So there's two ways that you can learn the word that she went out. Either, let's give her a negative slant first, but Teitse means that she just couldn't even wait. She was impulsive, and she just had to tell him right away. She couldn't even let him get inside, take a breather, take off his coat, sit
perhaps
down, have a cup.
That's also heard your words. Others heard it was in the courtyard.
Right.
Does that mean it was
a
public put down?
That's the question. If maybe she should have spoken to him inside, where it would have been more private. I also heard that you can have a positive slant. But teitse means that she did not want the people in her house to have to hear it. And we often find this, that when it comes to a relationship of husband, when you have a relationship of husband and wife, and sometimes they don't necessarily agree, it's not healthy to argue in front of the children. So Vatete means that she had the sensitivity that when she was going to speak in a manner which maybe others would look negatively toward David, she did it outside so that people would not necessarily see. So you can read it really either way. Vatete could be a positive thing. She did not want the conversation to go inside where maybe other people would be. Or maybe Tate there was impulsivity and she just couldn't even wait for him to come inside. But either way, this was certainly the rebuke, a very powerful one that she said, so much so that she said that you're not acting the way you're supposed to act because I know the way a king is supposed to behave because I lived watching and observing my father for many years. So David, of course, is going to remind himself that maybe Shaul was not the greatest example of a king. And that's what Pasuk Chaf Aleph says. But Yomer David El Michal. It's very interesting over here that when Michal was rebuking him, what was her? How was she referred to? Michal Bas Shaul. But when David speaks to her, he doesn't remember his father-in-law. He calls her just Michal. Right? He doesn't even want to associate his wife to her father, because apparently he felt that you're not necessarily looking at the best example. Lifnei Hashem, asher bachar bi miavich. It was in front of Hashem, which I have been chosen over your father, mikol beso and all his household. Letzavos osi. Nagid al Am Hashem al Yisrael, and I am to be the leader and the ruler over the entire nation, over Klai Yisrael. Vesichakti lifnei Hashem, vesichakti, as Mesudas Sion says, vesimchasi, I was happy, an inner joy, a proper simcha lifnei Hashem.
Radak's the word we spoke about before,
and radak
what, was, as opposed to samachti.
Which is strange that he uses
level.
That word. He should have said simachti.
Radak, did he just do radak?
No, we just
Lifnei Hashem also has a line there. Radak.
Lifnei Hashem.
Masher akati v'kavati lifnei Hashem asiti l'fi shekhav. I don't know what the word is. That he's saying that when I danced then and recognized Hashem, it was for honor, and he chose me from your father. That I should be, and it was all for Lifod Hashem. It was not for my
own. And it's also the same word in Reflei Hashem, like he brought the Omot and the Shlamim, Lifnei Hashem.
Right.
He didn't do it for himself, for his own ego.
Right, exactly. So that was. In other words, it's not necessarily that what David is saying is a terrible negative thing to his wife, but she's speaking about what she saw and the perception of what she saw, and he is explaining to her that what you saw is, it was such a tremendous inner joy that I lost myself in the process of the simcha, and therefore I wasn't really just making a fool of myself and just dancing around in an embarrassing manner, but I was doing it lifnei Hashem. I was doing it, everything was in the service of God, and therefore that's the reason why I was doing so. And so, why did he compare himself to Shaul? Because unfortunately, the difference between he and Shaul is that Shaul didn't always act through emotions in serving Hashem. He used his intellect and questioned a lot of the things that God told him to do. Shaul looked at the story of Amalek and said, why would I kill such people? The cattle, these people. So what did he do? He spared Agag, and ultimately, as we just had Purim, Haman almost mass genocide, annihilating all of Klai Yisrael, God forbid. And therefore, the problem was that he was saying that this is what he's responding to his wife. If all I ever do is think, I'm always thinking about what I should do and what I shouldn't do, that's not necessarily always the right way of serving Hashem. The right way of serving Hashem is to lose oneself in the process, to nullify my will to His will.
That's what he says. He says, what am I? I'm just like everybody else.
Right.
And as joyous as they are, I'm just I lost myself with the people as I should be, because I'm more than the people. Right. Hashem chose me for something, right. But I know that I am one of the
people. He doesn't have an ego problem.
Right. Well, and that we're going to focus on what you just said in this next pasuk, and he says as follows. He says, "Unkalosi od mizos," which means I would have even made myself even more lighter or lightheaded, if you will, but in the service of Hashem. But you see, shuffle the einai. Very interesting words that I should be lowly in my eyes. The im. And when it came to the women servants, Asher Amart Imam Ika Veda. And when it came to them, among them will I be honored. And he explains, what does it mean that I should be lowly in my own eyes? So it's an interesting halacha that when it comes to the Amida, when it comes to the Shmon Esrei, it's actually Gemara's brought down in halacha that a person is only allowed to bow down in the Shmon Esrei 4 times. 2 in the first paragraph and 2 by modim and fine. However, when it came, and what's the purpose of bowing down? It's because when a person bows down, you are humbling yourself in front of someone. You're acknowledging that there's something or someone greater than you. That's basically what you're doing. When it comes to a melech, the Gemara tells us something quite fascinating. That the way a king is supposed to daven is that when they begin the Shemona Esrei, the Amida, they're supposed to bow down and remain bowed down throughout the entire thing, the whole time. And so the question is, why? What's the reason for this? Is because a king has that struggle that on one hand he has to be looked upon in a respectful way, people have to have fear and awe of him, but that could lead to tremendous gaiva, haughtiness. And therefore, for this reason, he needs to constantly counter it and be even more humble than even the way a typical person behaves, which is also, we find in halacha, that a king has to walk around with a sefer Torah. Why does he have to walk around with a sefer Torah? We're not obligated to do it. Exactly. He has to remind himself there are laws above his laws. And therefore, that's how some explain, the man always does, of being lowly in my own eyes. He said that it's necessary that I have to lower myself to such a level. You're right. I am no longer just the king of Judah. I'm the Melech Yisrael. And that's exactly the reason why I had to behave this way, because otherwise I would let it get completely to my head. So I had to completely lower myself so that I would not ever become haughty.
He's beautifully rebuking her. That's right. Because who was her father? He was a person that the Shem chose. And she's the daughter of a person. She's not. She had a choice. She's a daughter of a choice. And she should remember who she is. She's looking down at him because it's past the mission.
Yeah, that's it.
And the father, to show, if Hashem chose him, then he took the kingship away from him. So he didn't perform properly.
Ruth, what's your feeling about all this?
I feel that there should be some kind of hacharas hatov on David's part. To come first from where she's coming from, that he knows she's the daughter of Sheol, and to know also that she was Hatzedekis, and to know that she saved his life.
Right.
And I feel, there should have been a little more of a compassion, even if she was wrong. Because she wasn't wrong in... She was wrong, but not from her upbringing. She didn't do it, to betray him.
Right.
She did it because she thought it was for his benefit.
Right.
Even though she was wrong.
Even if she was not just staying the case, even if she
was rebuking him. There should be.
No, she's asking, did he rebuke her? Did he respond to what he said as a rebuke
or just an explanation?
Well, because later on, it must have been something that he said, because later on it says that she doesn't have children until the day she dies.
I've learned that.
Well, that's going to be the last possible
thing. So what I'm saying, and the punishment must have been because of how Dovid.
No, it says no. She was born. She was born on her shoulders.
So let's see this last possible.
Maybe should have prayed for her then.
It could be.
Dovid should have done something to show Hakaras Hatov for what she did to him.
But we're going to see this last pasuk, pasuk Chaf Gimel, but certainly we didn't read it yet, but it's also punishment for David. Obviously, David would want his wife, Michal, he would also want a child. It's not just Michal.
He had a million other ones, so he had the children.
But he loved Michal. He had a tremendous love.
She had a child already.
So let's see. Let's continue. Let's finish off with Pasuk Chaf Gimel. We'll see the Rashi and the Radak, and what I think is a relatively fascinating explanation as to the reason for this particular punishment in Keneged Mida, based on a lot of emails that I often get from someone. Well, Michal bas Shaul. So it concludes, Michal, the daughter of Shaul, lo hayu of Yolet. She did not have a child ad yom mota, till her death, which... let's go a little bit out of order over here, since we're already on page 242. If you see the Radak, which is the fourth line, quoting a Medrash, he says as follows: "Of a b'yom hamita ha'isala, that she did have a child on the date she was born, that she died, which means that she died at childbirth." The Amru in the Medrash Shmuel says, "Ki shlosh anashim esu chayot," that there were three famous women that died at childbirth. Rachel, of course, giving birth to Binyamin, Vikalato Shel Eli, the daughter-in-law of Eli, as we recall all the way back in the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, when she found out that Pinchas, her husband, died, Chafian Pinchas died, so she had, she was pregnant, she died, and she named her child, does anyone remember the name of his child, her child? Ikavod, or in English, Ichabod. That was Ichabod. Umichal Bas Shaul. And Michal Bas Shaul. So, the Radak does point out that, in fact, there were a few people that she did, that did have children, that for whatever reason died during childbirth. The question is, why did she die during childbirth? So I'll explain to you another explanation in a second. But first, let's look. Go back to page 240 just for a moment, if you could. And let's look at the Rashi, which is short, as well as the last line of the Radak on page 240, which is short. Then we'll conclude with one last thought. Lo haya lov yaled, but also hayom b'halal. He said from that day on, she didn't have a child, but we saw that really she had a child before, as the Radak says, which is the very last Radak, but starting on the second to last line, the five words before the end of the line, Uperishu Razal, our Rabboseinu Zichron Levracha, blessed memory, say, Miyom hahu ve'elech lo haya lo. She did not have a child. Lo onesh, as some type of a... punishment. Mash Amra.
What she said.
That's what the Radak says. That's what the Radak tells us. Avolifne Hayom Hazeh, but before this time, Hayullah, she did have children, Kamosha Kosov, as we saw previously, Yitram Egla, Ishas David, the Amru Egla, Zumichal, Egla, we talked about a very affectionate name.
That was not Peshat, though.
So she did have children, but for some reason she was punished and could not have a child. And yes, David was also punished.
Excuse me, what do you mean for some reason? We just heard what you said to him. It's obvious what she said.
I don't think that was so terrible what she said for this to be
how
punishment.
She felt about it.
I don't feel
in front of Hashem. But that was with Hashem.
She was saying that she felt the dignity was for Hashem also. If you read, when she looks out the window
and she looks out, she's saying nothing to anybody. It's how she feels in her heart. Hashem is there with her.
Hashem considers this a terrible
thing.
I think David should have said that David prayed for her.
There's a history between her and
it's a valid point.
You have no idea that
she was married.
So, I'd like to conclude. I said, for some reason, is because the question is, why was this the particular punishment? What is the quid pro quo? What is the mita kenegan mita, measure for measure? What did she do to deserve this particular punishment? How does the punishment fit the crime? So, a very fascinating answer. Brought down, I was so happy when I saw it, because it drives me crazy. I have a friend, he's a friend, and he emails me every week all the pictures of his kids, and all thousands of pictures. And
my point is watch.
And they had pictures. Because he's my friend, so I love his kids. So, and I always email him back, you know, and I say, beautiful. And the kids are beautiful. Kids are beautiful. And what? No, because maybe once in a while. Anyway, and in those pictures, you see him, you know, he's a professional, an intelligent guy, and you see him acting very silly, because he has videos also and everything, and it's like not very becoming of such a great man to be acting in such a lowly way. So look what it says. It's beautiful. Say for Abbas Yonasan. I'm going to just read a few lines and then we'll stop. But it's such a very interesting possible interpretation. Explanation. Be your laman enshav onishah. Why did she get this particular punishment? Mahamida kenegin mida shahisakan b'mashalo zachsalavanim. Why? Because of what happened here, she can't have children. What's going on over here? So she says like this, Shateva avaim, because it's the nature of parents. Hasamechim, that when they are happy, b'yaldam hakatan, when they're holding on to their little infants, and they are so happy, mitoch kach, through their joy, osim masim hanirim kishtus. They do things that are, they make noises and faces and the tongue and the this and that. So why are they doing this? Why are you doing this to your infant child, to this kid? On the outside, you look like you're nuts, you're crazy. The whole reason, explains the Sefer Ahavas Yonatan, is in order to samech as banam ves de'es atzman, because you want to make your child happy. You have so much simcha, you're so joyous, so overtaken with happiness, that you end up doing things which are a little bit silly, as we quoted, as he does the Ahava Mekalkel Sashura. That when a person is such incredible feelings of love, you do things which are silly. The Kivan Shehi Luhavina. But since Michal did not understand this same concept, Shemigodol Ahavas Hashem Bedavid, that her husband had the same idea of loving of Hashem, Hagil Longdazu Lahavzos Avar Kenegin HaTorah, that she felt that he's just making a fool out of himself. He's jumping around, he's making faces, he's making goo-goo gaga noises to God, and you look like a fool. But the truth is, it's because he was able to tap in to such an incredible Ahavas Hashem, such love for Hashem, that he didn't care. He was only doing it to please and to connect to Hashem, not for himself. Lekach. Therefore, he says, Nimna gam mimena ahava kazu. She was withheld from this love, hamavia lamasa hevel v'shtus, of a parent who would be able to bring themselves to this. As though they're saying that she was unable to really understand how a person could have such ahava, such love. And she, maybe she would end up having that level of love, but she already had children, that's how he explains it. And therefore, in conclusion, let me just conclude with the words of the Rambam, which is one sentence. He says, "Davar yadua, it's known she'ein ahavas HaKadosh Baruch Hu niksharis v'libo shel adam, that a person cannot have the ultimate level of love for God in their heart, ad until the person is." Yazov kol ma shebaolam chutz nimena. If you forsake everything that which is in this world except for God. And therefore, if a person just is only caring about Hashem, then nothing else matters. That's the ultimate level of Avas Hashem. And when it comes to a parent, nothing else matters except for the child. And therefore, because of that, since she was unable to have that sensitivity, therefore it was taken away from her. The last word?
It's very interesting because when it came to David, yeah, she was able to forget who she was out of love to David, and she didn't show the respect to her father, who didn't want her to be with David. I mean,
but her father married her.